Well, for this week and next week, I want to continue the study that we've been doing in Proverbs that I've been calling Wisdom for Living. And then on January 22nd, Tim is going to start the study on the Holy Spirit. So I don't pretend to have exhausted the book of Proverbs, but we're going to stop after these 2 weeks, and we may come back to it from time to time and do something else in this book. It's been a neat study for me, at least. But for now, 2 more weeks, and we're done. And today I want to talk with you about how to resist one particular kind of temptation. Some forms of temptation are entirely internal. Your own lusts drive them. Unless you give in to them, it's very possible that nobody would even know what you're struggling with. It's just kind of going on inside of you, and you're talking to yourself, quit thinking that, stop doing that, stop wanting that. But it's all inside. Other temptations, though, come to you from outside of yourself, from somebody else, somebody who is already committed to doing evil, invites you to join with them in doing something that you should not do. So suddenly, in this situation, you've got something else to contend with. It's not just your own desires that are welling up, pressing you to do something you ought not to be doing, but now you've got somebody else putting pressure on you to do evil. And somebody who sometimes knows how to leverage off of the desires that are already in your heart that you don't need to give into, and now they're squeezing you, and your own wrong desires are squeezing you as well. Well, this kind of temptation can be very difficult to resist, and it's different from the stuff that's just inside of you that you think about the cartoons where you've got the picture of the angel on one shoulder and a picture of the devil on the other shoulder, but it's really all just you thinking, I ought to do this, I don't want to do this, I need to do it, back and forth. This is a different kind of battle from that one. And if the person coming to you to invite you to do something that you ought not to be doing happens to have some significant leverage in your life, then it can be very compelling. Many people have been talked into doing evil that had not even occurred to them to do before somebody came along and said, hey, you know what? Join me in this. Well, how do you insulate yourself against that kind of temptation? What can you do to keep from being talked into doing evil by somebody else? Well, for some answers to that dilemma, I want you to look with me at Proverbs 1, verses 10 through 19. And this is an extreme example. This is evil that includes violence and theft. This is a bad one. And certainly what applies to it applies to the lesser issues that someone would try to entice you into. Proverbs 1, 10 through 19. Proverbs 1, beginning with verse 10. My son, if sinners entice you, do not consent. If they say to you, come with us, let us lie in wait for blood. Let us ambush the innocent without cause. Let us swallow them alive like Sheol, even whole as those who go down to the pit. We will find all kinds of precious wealth. We will fill our houses with spoil. Throw in your lot with us. We shall all have one purse. My son, do not walk in the way with them. Keep your feet from their path, for their feet run to evil, and they hasten to shed blood. Indeed, it is useless to spread the baited net in the sight of any bird. But they lie in wait for their own blood. They ambush their own lives. So are the ways of everyone who gains by violence. It takes away the life of its possessors. Now, this passage begins with a summary of the problem and the solution in this kind of temptation that comes to you from somebody else. And it says it in very simple words. So simple you might just breeze right by it and miss that this is a summary statement of the whole deal. Verse 10 says, "My son, if sinners entice you, do not consent." Now the problem is defined in that verse. The problem is that sinners entice you. Somebody who is committed to doing evil tries to lure you into joining in that evil. Somebody is an active agent in trying to get you to do something you don't have any business doing. They entice you. They lure you in. They're actively pursuing you, wanting you to do evil with them. And they're already committed. You know, the invitation is just for you to join in. Now, this is a little different from having to argue with yourself about what you ought not to be doing anyway and your own little private temptations that come up. Some of the other people in your life can be very convincing. They know how to work you, and they know how to spin the arguments and make the invitations seem pretty innocent. Some other folks really know how to squeeze you and push your buttons and make you feel very compelled to do what they would like for you to do. Some people are just, they figured out how to pressure you. And they're trying to lure you in. And they're going to do whatever they have to do. And so whatever leverage is at their disposal, they're going to use against you. Now that's the summary of the problem. Sinners entice you. Let's all sing it. No, let's don't. You would. I shouldn't have said that. If you guys that just came in, we're in Proverbs 1, starting with verse 10. This is the summary of the problem. Sinners entice you. They're working you over. They're trying to trick you. And the summary of the solution is also in verse 10. Do not consent. If sinners entice you, do not consent. Now, that's the part you just breeze right on by. Yeah, I got that. Don't do it. Okay. The word consent is important, though. It's an important part of the answer. You have to consent. Nobody can make you do evil. They have to get your permission. They have to convince you and get you to go along with it. Sounds a little obvious, but we miss that part of it. Don't agree. You have to agree before it'll happen. Don't get talked into doing what's wrong. Now, some of the time, much of the time, that's all you need. It's evil. You identify it as evil. You see it for what it is. You have somebody trying to get you to go along with it, and you go, no way, no, I'm not going to do it. You might lose a friend or realize that you didn't have a friend to start with, but it's easy for you. You know you're not going to do that, and you just say no, and it's over. But other times, it gets to you, right? Other situations, maybe another person or whatever, there's an actual temptation to do this evil thing. The person has found something that tests you. And a part of you really wants to go along. There are situations where it doesn't seem so easy to say no, where it actually does tempt you. And sometimes you find yourself struggling with what you can't even believe you're struggling with. You actually want to do it, even though you know you shouldn't. And you're considering accepting the offer. Now, at times like that, the summary statement is good, but you need more. Do not consent is a good place to start, but okay, why not? You need to give yourself a pep talk. You need the details. And the details are what follow verse 10 in this passage. The rest of this passage gives you that additional perspective to enable you to resist the temptation of joining in evil. After this summary statement in verse 10, that's what we get. And this gives us an idea of how to resist that sinner who's using leverage on us. Look at verse 11. If they say, come with us, let us lie in wait for blood, let us ambush the innocent without cause, let us swallow them alive like Sheol, even whole as those who go down to the pit, we will find all kinds of precious wealth, we will fill our houses with spoil, throw in your lot with us, we will all have one purse. Now, there's a lot in here in terms of the details of how people put pressure on you to do evil. Verse 11 says, come with us. Come with us. I don't know if you've noticed, but there's something in the heart of man that makes evil seem like a lot less of a problem if there are more people involved. Something in our fallen minds makes us think that guilt is divided by the number of participants. So that if there are lots of us, the guilt is so small it just doesn't even count anymore. It's just gone. And here's how it comes to you. Everybody's doing it. We're all in this together, man. Come with us. In fact, they might even work a little more of an angle on you. We're all in this together. But understand, it's not even your idea. It was our idea. The guilt is ours. You don't have any obligation whatsoever. Just come along with us. We thought of it. So, you think, well, it was their idea. I'm not really guilty if I go along. They're going to carry all the guilt because they're the original visionary in this situation. You know, these things don't work, but they do appeal. You can have all the benefits without any of the guilt. Just come with us. Now, there are two kinds of appeals in what they're saying here. Neither of them diminishes your guilt if you go along with it. Guilt is not divided by the number of participants, so the everybody's doing it argument doesn't help. And guilt for your evil actions is not going to be any less if somebody else had the idea first. Once you buy in, you're in 100%. They don't carry the lion's share of the guilt because they thought of it. But those are tools that people bring to you very subtly to entice you to do evil. They try to make it sound like you're not guilty if you participate in what is evil. And then there's another aspect of this. There's the outright appeal to the twisted thrill of the evil itself. There is something about sin that entices the human heart. And we may as well face it. There is an appeal in evil. And this passage gives a fairly extreme example of that. But you know that it does appeal. It says, let us swallow them alive like Sheol, even whole as those who go down to the pit. Verse 11, I missed. Come with us, let us lie in wait for blood. Let us ambush the innocent without cause. You know, for people who participate in evil, there is a twisted thrill, even in hurting other people, even in having power over somebody that can't stop you, taking something that's not yours. A lot of the crime that goes on in our society doesn't make any sense at all if you don't realize that this is a real part of the fallen human heart. You got how much? Do you know what the penalty of bank robbery is? And you walked out with how much? They don't keep that much in those drawers. Not enough for 20 years of your life. There's so many crimes that are utterly ridiculously foolish unless you realize they're doing it for the thrill. Now, don't think your heart is exempt from this. And so here the appeal is to the pleasure of sin. And there is some for a time. It's a deception. But it does please for a time. And again, it's a way to try and get you to forget about the guilt. The guilt that you would incur is not diminished because it's going to be fun. But it is part of the enticement. And then there's the appeal of the many pleasant things that can be gained without work. Verse 13. We'll find all kinds of precious wealth. We'll fill our houses with spoil. You're going to find the wealth? Where are you finding it? From the people who are bleeding. Remember, they just spilled the blood in verse 11. Oh, look, I found this in his pockets. All of this wealth, it's going to be so easy. Don't have to work for it. You don't have to earn it. You can have everything you want. You can have it right now. It's part of the appeal. You're going to get it. You're going to beat the system. You're not going to have to wait like other people. You can fill your house up with treasure right now. Now, again, it's a lie. It doesn't tell you the rest of the story, but it is powerful leverage. And then, if all of these fail, there's another one in here. This one gets a lot of people. To entice you, sinners will use a twisted appeal to trust and friendship. Verse 14, throw in your lot with us. We shall have one purse. This is this whole honor among thieves idea. We're going to be in this together. You can trust us. We're your friends. We're going to kill those other people, but we would never hurt you. We're your friends. We're big buddies after all, and you're going to be equal with us, even though it was our idea, even though you don't have to carry any of the guilt, even though we're going to share equally with you. You can trust us. This is a team effort, and we want you on our team. Think about the thrill of having all of this power over people. Think about all the good stuff you're going to get. And we want you with us on our team. So these are the appeals. Given the right circumstances, they can be very difficult to resist. What if your job is on the line? And you can keep your job by looking the other way. You don't have to actually kill anybody in this scenario. You just have to let somebody else steal, and your benefit will be keeping your job, maybe even getting a bonus this year. What if you're in serious financial trouble and suddenly there's an opportunity for easy money, and if you don't take it, you're going to lose the house? What if it's your best friend and you're thinking to yourself, I don't have many friends and I don't want to lose this one? Nobody's beyond temptation. And there are going to be times when you're actually tempted to do something that you know is wrong. You hadn't even thought of it. It comes to you by somebody else who says, hey, have I got a deal for you? And suddenly you're struggling with this. So how do you resist? Well, that's what the final section of the passage deals with. Look at verse 15. Kind of gives us a start in how to resist. My son, do not walk in the way with them. Keep your feet from their path. Now, again, this is pretty simple language, and it's the kind of thing you might just breeze right by. Okay, yeah, I got it. Don't walk with them. What's next? But there's a powerful safeguard in what this says. And what it says is, don't start down that road. Do not begin to go the way they're going. Don't say to yourself, I'll walk along a little ways. I'll go along for now. I'm going to draw the line where the law draws the line. And I'm not going all the way through this, but I don't need to say anything right now. I don't need to cause a big stir now. I'll just go along for a while. Now, many people have taken baby steps into the ruin of their own lives, thinking, I won't walk with them. Just going to go along a little ways. It's what we go through when we take the kids to my mom's. Mom lives on a lake. Daddy, can I wade? Has anyone ever, under age 14, waded without swimming? Because it hadn't happened at my house. We're just going to wade, and then the pants are wet, and then the splash, and well, I'm wet now. That's how we get into it. I'm not going to swim. I'm just going to wade. I'm just going to go a little deeper. Well, my pants got wet when I stepped to it, and it splashed, and so I might as well go a little deeper. And do not walk in the way with them. Walk is descriptive of the habitual pattern of your life. Don't start. Don't do that. Don't be that way. Don't go with them. Hang around with people who are doing something evil. You'll find that you're embroiled in it before you know it. Now, one of the passages that most people know regarding temptation is 1 Corinthians 10:13. Turn over to that and look at it with me. 1 Corinthians 10:13. No temptation has overtaken you but such as is common to man. And God is faithful, who will not allow you to be tempted beyond what you are able, but with the temptation will provide the way of escape also, so that you will be able to endure it. Now what this is saying is, when you're tempted, there's always a way out. God doesn't force you to sin. He always gives you an escape. He's not going to let you be overwhelmed. But the mistake that we make is that we drive past all of our exits before we start looking for an exit. And what this proverb, this part of Proverbs is teaching us, is that the exit is way back at the start of this thing. The best one to take anyway is, don't start down that road. Get off now. Here's another safeguard to keep you from temptation. Realize the character of the people who are doing evil. Verse 16 describes them. Their feet run to evil and they hasten to shed blood. Now these are the people who are telling you, we want you on our team. Throw in your lot with us. We're your friends. You can trust us. We like you. This is our idea, but we want you involved. We could be all rich by ourselves, but we want you to be rich with us. We like you that much. Come on and do this with us. We're going to kill that guy for his money. We would never hurt you, though. We like you. And what you need to realize is, if they'll lie to somebody else, they'll lie to you when it's convenient. If they'll steal from somebody else, they'll steal from you when it's convenient. This is a fool's game. Their character is they run to evil. They can't be happy without being involved in evil. When they entice you, don't be deceived about who they are. When it's convenient, they're gonna do to you whatever they want to do. And while they're doing it, they're going to be saying to somebody else what they were saying back here in these other verses. It's his turn. Oh, you throw in your lot with us. You can trust us. We want you on the team. We're going to get them. No good thing comes from evil. Proverbs 12:3 says, a man will not be established by wickedness. God's not going to bless that. But one of the ways that the wicked get you into something you shouldn't have been doing in the first place is they appeal to your need for fellowship. They appeal to this twisted idea of friendship where we love you, but we're going to get them. And you don't know what day you're going to be gotten and they're going to be telling somebody else they love them. And you need to realize, when people are chasing after evil, they're not capable of what they're promising you. You find your fellowship in the church. You find people of good character, and you'll have the fellowship that you need. And you young folks especially, you need to know this. You're going to grow up one day and get out from under the comfortable umbrella that is protecting you right now, your family and your home, and you're going to meet people, and you're going to have to evaluate who they are. And if their character is not above reproach, don't think you can trust them. They are what they are. If they're lying to somebody else and they're stealing from somebody else and they're cheating somebody else, that's who they are. And they can't change it because they like you. And so one day, they'll be lying to you and cheating you and stealing from you and hurting you. And they'll be telling somebody else, we love you. We'd never do it to you. Come on, let's get them. Wickedness can never bring about good. So you look for that character, and you find your fellowship in the church with people of godly character. And yeah, you need it, but the evil people know you need it, and they'll use it for leverage to get you to be involved with them in things you should never have been doing in the first place. And so they say, you'll be one of us. You need to belong. Come and belong with us. We want you on our team. We're all in it together. We'll have one purse. But remember, their character prevents them from having what they promise you. You find it from people of character. And then, recognize the foolishness of pursuing evil yourself. Because part of you wants to go there. You need to think about where you'd be going if you went. Verse 17 and verse 18. Indeed, it is useless to spread the baited net in the sight of any bird. But they lie in wait for their own blood. They ambush their own lives. People who are enticing you to do evil are involved in self-destructive behavior. They harm themselves. They're actively pursuing their own destruction. They're ruining their own lives. Now think of how foolish this is. If you needed to eat by catching your food, you would know that if the birds are where they can see you baiting the trap, the little bird with the brain that would, you know, size of the fingernail on your little finger, pea-sized brain, any bird is smart enough to know not to get in that trap. You're not going to catch the bird if you can't disguise it. But these people are setting their own trap for their own lives and being trapped in it. They're setting themselves up for destruction. They're caught and they're digging a pit and falling in their own pit. It's utter foolishness. They're completely blind. And here's the clincher. You need to understand that if you go with them into this evil that they're enticing you to, you're going to be just as foolish. There are no exceptions. If you pursue evil with them, you're going to make yourself that kind of fool. You'll think you're going to beat the system. That's what they were thinking. Nobody ever beats the system. Look at verse 19. Here's the absolute statement. You're not getting out of it. Don't go down that road, or here's where you'll be. It says, so are the ways of everyone who gains by violence. It takes away the life of its possessor. Possessors. This is what sin does to people. Why would someone make such a foolish mess of his life? So that you could describe it by a guy setting a trap for himself and then dying in his trap. Why would anybody be that foolish? Why can't they see what they're doing and stop? They destroy themselves and they're unaware of what they're doing. Why is that? Well, this is what sin does to people. You think you're going to dabble in it and keep power over it, but it doesn't work. It destroys your ability to reason. It destroys your ability to think. It destroys your life. And nobody beats the system. You can't get in and out of this at will. And so the wise don't begin. They don't start down the road. They don't walk in the way of the ungodly. Keep your feet from that path. Now, I got a question for you. As we're thinking about this, and you may want to, you know, talk about your friend, because I'm sure you know somebody who struggles with this, but we're going to assume it's your friend if you speak up, you know, unless you tell us otherwise. What do you think is the hardest? When is it hardest, I should say? When is it hardest to be rational and clear-headed about temptation coming to you from somebody else? What tends to cloud your thinking in this area or the thinking of your friend?
Someone you trust.
Okay, somebody you trust. All right, what else?
You think you're in love.
Oh!
Ho, 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 ho.
It's like Yoda, love, you think?
Backwards writing, I am.
Anakin Skywalker and in Star Wars, you know? I mean, it was someone you trust, but also the one in authority.
Okay. That's a good one. So before you answer any more, let me just ask you something just to think about. If an evil person happened to be in authority, would they know how to leverage that to get you to do evil?
Yes.
Okay. That wasn't hard, was it?
I mean, we have right? I mean, history is...
If an evil person had the title pastor, just by chance, once in a million, I know, would that evil, quote-unquote, pastor know how to leverage his authority to harm you? Okay, good. We got that settled. What else makes it hard, Chandler?
You have a desire for a material object, and it's way outside of your bounds, and they're going to offer you some way to get it without it costing you anything.
Okay.
And you put in whatever words you want.
I'm going to write what Chandler said. All right. So the person apparently has the power to give you the stuff that you can't get on your own. All right, what else?
What was the original question?
What is it that makes...
I'm just trying to go back to it.
What tends to cloud your thinking when somebody else is enticing you to do evil? What situations or...
When you're already struggling in that area, when it's already a weakness.
Ooh. Now, again, if an evil person comes along, is it possible that that person would have picked up on a weakness of yours and have picked you out because they figured out you might have a weak spot here?
Definitely.
Okay, we got that settled.
Well, and you know,
seeking Paul's, someone to devour.
Yeah, Paul says that, you know, Satan himself disguises himself or his emissaries as angels of light. So you may not recognize this person as being evil in the first place because, like you said, it's someone you trust. But
right.
Also, they may, in what they're doing, have presented truth.
Yeah, they're not going to come with the little red cape and horns and the pitchfork outfit on. They're not.
They may have been, like you said, going back to a pastor, someone who's preached from Scripture. He, you know, may have presented truths that actually had, you know, as far as your life and had made an impact. And so, you know, you see this person as someone, you know, that you respect because of, you know, he, like going back to the authority, he has presented truth. But there's that amount of untruth or lies that he mixes with that.
That's right.
That truth.
That's right. By nature, deception has to look pretty good or nobody's fooled.
Right.
Channel?
You have a person in authority who has used his ability to lie, cheat, steal to get his authority. He has a sense of like kind. I mean, it's like you take a kid out of a school who's in trouble with everybody and he goes to a new school and they instantly pick up with the same kind right there because they know each other.
Yeah.
So he knows human nature also.
Yeah. That's right. And so people know how to work you. If they're in the habit of enticing others to do evil, they know how to work you. And if they're good at it, I guess that's making me summarize all of this today, Chandler, but they're just good at it. They're good at enticing. They make it look good. They know how to push your buttons.
Yeah, I think the one that Chuck mentioned there, number five, is probably a methodology of those who would perpetrate one through four and six. And
yeah.
That's the methodology they would use.
You know, and that's definitely fair game for answering the question because it can be anything that makes it cloud your thinking. It could be, you know, here it's relationship. Here it's... And I like the way you worded it. It's your perception, your desires. They look good. You like. If somebody comes to you and they're attractive and they're likable and they've got a good sense of humor and they're easy to be around, even if you don't think you're in love, they got a better shot at fooling you because we're creatures of the flesh. You know, this person seems to be clean cut, easy to get along with, and so they might more easily influence you.
As far as that goes, when it comes to love, you know, thinking you love, but also the desire to be loved or respected, or to have the authority that you know from someone of authority, things like that.
Yeah, that's right. So you got
this double-edged sword.
You got relationship. You got your perception of things. You've got somebody's position that might make it more difficult for you to say no. And this one works a lot of people over. The longing to get stuff, and this person in particular looks like they might be able to make it happen for you, and you haven't been able to. You know, they found your weakness, and they're coming to you on purpose because they think that you'll give in. They're really smooth at it. All of these things can make the temptation more difficult to resist. And we talk through them, you know, primarily because once you see it, it's easier to resist. Recognize this stuff is happening. There are a lot of people, I kind of teased you a little bit on this authority thing. It's so easy when we're talking about it. Is it possible for a pastor to do this and leverage his authority to get you to do evil? Everybody says yes. Everybody's nodding. And they would do the same thing in the church with the evil pastor. Oh, yeah, that's possible. Seeing it coming in a specific situation, that's a little different. So we got to always be ready to test everything.
I think that goes back to what you talked about the whole issue of being in a group. Because in your group, then you have a lot of people that, you know, are agreeing, and that agreement makes, let's say, if there are qualms that you have about the whole situation, or, you know, it could be the path the group is taking as far as the teaching, the things that they're practicing as a group.
Yeah.
And for you to be that one that's out of step, saying, you know, this is wrong, this is contrary to Scripture, this is, you know,
yeah.
Categorize it as sin, you know, becomes very difficult
yeah.
to do, and for you to speak out and say, hey, this is wrong.
Yeah.
And you know, because you see other people that are, you know, that don't see anything wrong with it.
Yeah. And this can be particularly traumatic, and I've seen this happen in a church where people are plugged in and the church had been pretty solid. And the church began to drift away from biblical truth and further into error. Well, it's gradual. You know, it wasn't an immediate thing. And then a lot of people had invested everything in this church. All their friends were from church. Everything they knew was from that church. It was the only place of worship that they knew. So they're talking about losing all their friends if they stand against this. And at what point do you stand up? It's this gradual thing. It's like we're drifting. When do you say, okay, that's it, that's enough, we're out of here? It's hard. So there are a lot of things that can make it cloudy for us. I want to think for a moment about the relationships. Because in all of these, there is an aspect of relationship, isn't there? You trusted them. You thought they were trustworthy. You think you're in love with that person. That's a relationship. Even the position of authority is a relationship issue, among other things. Even you want the stuff. Well, you wanted the stuff before that guy came along. But maybe by being in relationship with this person, you can get the stuff now. So all of these have that aspect. And this is part of what makes it so hard when evil is coming to you from outside. You're being invited, enticed by somebody. This is an actual flesh and blood person or a group of people. Now what do you do? Look at Deuteronomy 13, verses 6 through 11. And before we read this, we need to point out that this was a theocracy. It was Israel. And heresy was a capital offense. I'm not suggesting that heresy needs to be a capital offense in our society. I just want you to understand how serious God is about your resisting evil coming to you from another person. Deuteronomy 13, beginning with verse 6. If your brother, your mother's son or daughter, or the wife you cherish, or a friend who is as your own soul, entice you secretly, saying, let us go and serve other gods, whom neither you nor your fathers have known, of the gods of the peoples who are around you, near you or far away from you, from one end of the earth to the other, you shall not yield to him or listen to him, and your eye shall not pity him, nor shall you spare or conceal him, but you shall surely kill him. And your hand shall be first against him to put him to death, and afterwards the hand of all the people. So you shall stone him to death because he has sought to seduce you from the Lord your God, who brought you out of the land of Egypt, out of the house of slavery. Then all Israel will hear and be afraid, and you will never again do such a wicked thing among you. Or they will hear and be afraid, and will never again do such a wicked thing among you. Okay, so how serious is God about this relationship not interfering with your judgment? Here's the situation. The wife that you cherish, your own son, your own daughter, the friend who is as your soul. That's your best friend to the 10th power. Secretly says, you know what we ought to do? We ought to get us one of those idols like those people across on the other side of the valley of God, because their crops are fine and ours aren't. Your duty, in spite of the relationship in that society, was to turn him in, and at the execution, you took the first shot. That's how serious God is about your walk with him not being changed by people who you have a relationship with. Nobody can be so important to you that they can entice you away from God and toward evil. You have to be willing to lose that relationship in order to walk with the Lord. Now, we don't have capital punishment trials for heresy or for making statements about let's go into another religion. But the principle remains, you do not let any human relationship lead you away from the Lord. None of them. Never. You can't. Now, there's another situation that makes it really hard to resist, even though that relationship is kind of a part of all of them. The other is what Chandler said this. Yeah, you want the stuff. Took him longer, but you want the stuff. There is an appeal in material things. And this happens to people a lot at work. This is something I dealt with when I had a regular career. You know, just look the other way and everything will be all right. Don't look the other way and you're looking for a job. And you don't want to lose that opportunity. So here the enticement is not so much what you can get. It doesn't have to be just from harming somebody, but you want the stuff and you're going to make some compromises in order to get the stuff. Now, how do you resist that aspect of it? Can you think of any leverage you can use to give yourself the pep talk or keep the right perspective so that the longing for material things doesn't get you to that point?
I think you can just look at verse 19 right there. It just says it so clearly. You're not going to get what you want. Even if you pursue that avenue, it's not going to satisfy.
Yeah. It won't work.
Yeah, I think we have to remember that we do not provide for our needs. That God is the provider. And if we get into that trap of thinking that, you know, it's up to us to fulfill that need for that whatever it is, then we're going to find ways to fulfill that need.
Yeah. And then,
I think plus in scripture, just, you know, it's the whole idea of, you know, idolatry takes many forms, and that's a form of idolatry. And God has promised that He will deal with idolatry.
Yeah.
And you know, we can be pretty sure that that's something He's going to destroy, and especially anything that would entice, you know, any of His children, He's going to destroy that.
Yeah, and we do have legitimate physical needs. Jesus talked about them in the Sermon on the Mount. Your Heavenly Father knows that you need these things. The Gentiles chase after them. God knows you need them. Seek first the kingdom of God. All these things will be added to you. So the question, though, when we want the stuff, much of the time is not what we need, but what we desire to have, even though we don't really need it. We're not content. And we want more. And other people have it. And that kind of gets to us. And I should have that. And there is a lust in that that we have to fight against. And Mark made a good point that it's not going to work. And Gary makes a good point that this is a form of idolatry. And there are plenty of verses in the scripture to kind of help keep a perspective check on this. One of them is 1 Timothy 6:9. It says, "But those who want to get rich fall into temptation and a snare and many foolish and harmful desires which plunge men into ruin and destruction." It doesn't say it's evil to be rich. It's this desire to get rich that ruins your life. Some people God has blessed, you know, money just attracts to them like a magnet. You can't explain it. Other people, you know, their magnets turn the wrong way and they're repelling the money. And, you know, God's the one that lines that magnet up. I don't know. But if you got that longing to be rich and to have more, then it's something to fight against. Paul said, godliness with contentment is great gain. And that's something that we have to struggle for, I know. One other verse, or one other passage I want you to look at. James 1, 13 through 15. And this applies to any enticement, but particularly for that longing for the material. Let no one say when he is tempted, I am being tempted by God. For God cannot be tempted by evil, and he himself does not tempt anyone. But each one is tempted when he is carried away and enticed by his own lust. Then when lust has conceived, it gives birth to sin, and when sin is accomplished, it brings forth death. Verse 16, do not be deceived, my beloved brethren. So this is a lot of the battle, is just keeping the right perspective on the material, keeping the right perspective on our relationships, because any relationship that would lead you away from God is destructive and has to be dealt with accordingly. Other questions or comments? All right, let me lead us in prayer and we'll be dismissed.